everyone, and welcome to the One Goal U.S. Soccer Podcast. We are back, this time on Friday, talking all things U.S. soccer. If you haven't already, please check out our interview with Paxton Pomyk, all of FC Dallas. I'll speak for myself and say that was a really fun interview. I think, George, you could probably agree.
Oh, 100%. He's a guy who I've loved for a long time, appreciated his game, and just great to talk to him, see that his head's in the right place, and he's looking forward for a big 2021.
Yeah, definitely. I agree on all accounts there. But, George, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. I moved back in at Boston University for a second semester of my senior year. So my undergrad career is coming to an end. So yeah, it's been a sentimental day.
Well, I'm glad you're moved in and everything is going well for you. Almost time to enter yourself into the super draft. And we can talk about that later today as well. But let's talk about the news. First of all, we have no answer in the Juve or Roma or Club Brugge. We look like it's going to be Roma or Juve for Brian Reynolds. Apparently, he tested positive for COVID at the camp, so we wish him a speedy recovery. Also, other transfer news, Jordan Morris to Swansea. Give me your initial thoughts on both of those.
Yeah, I think with Brian Reynolds, it's definitely interesting. We, you know, for a long time thought it was Juventus. At times, we thought the deal was done, probably at two or three different times. We've been told the deal is done. And then there was a time where Brian Reynolds, even on his Instagram, said nothing was done. You know, different people, there was that Twitter page, like Big Bad MLS was like, oh, like we got it wrong. It's been as big of a transfer saga for an American as could get. It's been messy. Like, we don't know what's going on. People are telling us different things. We have, you know, pages that are respectable saying the deal is done. And then we have people saying the deal isn't done. So it's been messy, but we've been told multiple times, Juve's got it. We're done. First it was Cagliari, then it was Benevento. So like, yeah, so it's been all over the place.
So we still have no answer.
The new ones that Roma's back in, who knows? He could go to Marseille tomorrow or Club Brugge. I heard he was going to actually to the Yokohama Mariners of the J-League, but
I feel like every week we talk about, okay, this is the week we're going to talk about Brian Reynolds, and yet we still have no answer. So eventually we will give like the tactical breakdown and all of that good stuff, but we can finally do that for Jordan Morris. So Jordan Morris looks like it's going to be a loan to Swansea again. This is not official, but it's interesting. You know, he had links to Wolfsburg. But let's talk about Jordan Morris first. Let's talk about Swansea. Just for those who don't know, Swansea is currently at 46 points, second in the championship. And that's one of the two spots for automatic promotion to the Premier League. So I think in theory, that makes it a good move. I think looking at the stats, they have a plus 16 goal differential, second highest in the league, 1.21 goals per game. I mean, they score a lot of goals. They play up and down. But I think what's really interesting for me is the formation they play. So they play like a 3-4-1-2. And right now, you look on transfer market, and he'd be the highest value attacking player for them. And again, take that with a grain of salt. But what does this all mean for Jordan Morris?
I think I actually kind of like the move. And the reason I say that is Swansea's a team that's been in the Premier League. They have Premier League experience. Back when they were in the Premier League, they were known for playing a good style, good attacking possession game that a lot of lower table teams didn't play. So they have pedigree when it does come to the Premier League. And I think for Jordan Morris, it's obviously a little bit of a risk. I believe it would be an initial loan. So maybe if they don't get promoted, then he can reevaluate a little bit depending on how he did. But if they do get promoted and he earns a permanent move, it's the Premier League. The Premier League, by my account, is the best league in the world. If you can play for any team in the Premier League, that means something. It really does. So I think if you're Jordan Morris, you're turning 27 this year, it's time to chase your dreams. And if his dream is to play in the Premier League, he has to do it now. He can't say, oh, let me go play in the Bundesliga for a couple years and earn a Premier League move. No, he has to chase his dreams now. And if this is how he can get to the Premier League the fastest, then it's what he has to do. And it's not a year, it's not 2 years, it could be possibly 6 months. So I do like the move.
Yeah, I think my initial thoughts is it kind of reminds me of the Jack Harrison move where he goes to Leeds on loan and then they figured out a way to purchase him from Manchester City afterwards. So I think it's really similar in that respect that Morris is kind of betting on himself and betting on this team that they're going to make it. And I think, you know, that's a pretty good bet, all things considered. It's tough. At his age, you don't see a lot of Premier League teams saying, yeah, we're ready to buy this guy and bring him in right away. It's kind of a good opportunity for him to come in a little bit behind the ball and say, you know what? I can kind of warm up to playing in Europe. And then if it proves that it's good enough for me and this team makes it to the next level, I can go with them. So I think all things considered, it's a good move. I think it's probably tough for the Seattle Sounders in terms of how they're going to replace him. But this is a U.S. soccer podcast. I'm only going to talk about U.S. soccer at this point. But I mean, I'm excited. I think it's good for him. I think if Paulo Ayoala comes with him, it's going to be interesting. But let's go back to the formation, the 3-4-1-2. Where does Jordan Morris fit into that?
I think he can play in any attacking position. I think he's a versatile guy, and I'm sure Swansea knows that. He can play on the right, he can play on the left, he can play down the middle. So I think even if they want to use a wingback system at some point, he could probably play as a wingback. So I think he's just a versatile, athletic guy, and when you're a lower table Premier League team, you need guys like that. Even if they think tactically he's in there yet, when it's the 75th minute and you're down a goal, you're going to need a guy like Jordan Morris. When it's the 75th minute and you're up a goal, you're going to need a guy like Jordan Morris. So I think even if he tactically doesn't fit in, know the system right away, he's a guy who after a week after he signed, he'll probably be getting minutes because he's just, you know, that athletic. You look at someone like Daniel James, who was thriving in Swansea's system. So he got a move to Manchester United because he was, you know, kind of just that speedster, you know, breaking through. And it's not like even like he scored 10 goals, had 10 assists. I think he had like maybe 3 goals, 6 assists, something like that. And he earned a move to Manchester United. So clearly Swansea is a system for which can accommodate fast soccer players and athletic players like Jordan Morris.
Yeah, that's a really great call. I think that's definitely interesting. You mentioned that wing back position. I think if Paulo Ayoala makes that move, that's where you'd see him, which would be kind of cool. I always like Ayoala as a right wing back. And I think, you know, as long as Jordan Morris is playing, I think it's just cool to say, you know, any path works. I tweeted about that, I think, last week. And I think there's a lot of criticism about Jordan Morris and his path. Obviously, he had the Werder Bremen links early in his career, turned those down, said, I'm staying home. Jermaine Jones roasted him about his dog. And now 27 years old, in his prime, he's on the verge of making it to a very high-level championship team and had Bundesliga offers. We don't know how tangible those offers actually were, but it's working for him. So I think that's a good lesson to a lot of us US soccer fans out there that anything works. And what's the thing that we always say? Patience. So I think this is a perfect example of why it's so important to be patient. But are we going to start calling them Swansea America if they get Paulo Ayoala?
I think they're going to have a good time, I'm sure. They're good friends. They play with the national team together for a while. I think they probably played a little bit with the U-20s a little bit together. So, yeah, they know each other well. And I'm sure if they do end up there together, it'll be a good experience for both of them.
I guess just talking about the national team, you probably shouldn't mention that top, but it looks like the Olympics might be getting canceled at this point, which is really tough for our U23 team. And I think that's really unfortunate. It's one of those things where in a year like this, it's really hard to have game time. And with a talent pool like ours, so young and just so much lacking international experience, that would have been a really good thing for us. But we do have a game coming up, Trinidad and Tobago, a revenge game, if you will. Are you excited about that?
I will say we already had our revenge game in the Gold Cup. We dealt with that. So I don't think, yes, we lost way back then, but I don't think every time we play against Trinidad and Tobago, it needs to be a revenge game. We don't need to keep having revenge against a small team like that. No disrespect to Trinidad and Tobago. Love a lot of their players. Shout out Kevin Molino. But we don't need to say every game against Trinidad and Tobago is a revenge game. I think that's just a small team mentality. You know, I don't think every time Italy's going to play Sweden, they're going to say it's a revenge game because Sweden made it to the World Cup over them. So I think we need to let it go, because it's one of the things that kind of like upsets me every time. Or like when I saw we're playing Trinidad Tobago, people were like, oh, revenge. It's like, yeah, the first time we played them after, you can see it was revenge and we took care of business. But it's like, they're just a team, like right. Get over it.
Right. You shouldn't be measuring your success against Trinidad Tobago time and time again. Like, we've already beat them. We know what would happen. Let's keep moving forward and let's strive to bigger things. If there's going to be any game we should try to measure ourselves against, it's going to be the Mexico. It's going to be the Costa Ricas. And this is not that level.
Exactly.
So I think, yeah, we should handle this one pretty easily. I think it's interesting. A lot of the guys like Jordan Morris departed camp, Brian Reynolds departed camp. So we're going to see what that roster looks like. I'm going to just make a prediction right now. Not even a bold prediction, just a prediction that I think George Bella will get the start left back come that game against Trinidad and Tobago. Any bold predictions for yourself?
I do think George Bell gets the left back spot, and I can't really think of any other bold predictions right now. I think it'll be pretty standard for what I think. I'm just very interested to see which of the U23 players make the bench. I think that'll be very telling of who impressed. And I think maybe there might be a shock player in there. Maybe Henry Kessler makes the bench. So We'll say Henry Kessler makes the bench. I don't know how he was doing in camp. In that one video, it seemed like he was pretty vocal. He was pretty confident. You don't speak like that. You're not vocal like that if you're having a shocking camp. So clearly he's doing well. He's confident to talk. So we'll say Henry Kessler makes the bench.
Yeah, I believe Henry Kessler went to college, went to the University of Virginia. So I'm going to use that as a perfect segue into talking about the MLS Super Draft because, of course, George, if people don't know already, George does play college soccer. And I'll give you the moment now to tell a little about your story and then we can get in the Super Draft.
Yeah, well, I feel like I don't think I say it a lot, but you know, who knows? There's new listeners all the time, but I played, you know, DA Academy, came through, play college soccer, Boston University, you know, so having a good time. We're having a spring season, so excited for that. We'll see what happens after, but yeah. And so obviously growing up, watched a lot of college soccer, play college soccer now. And the thing about this draft is as a senior, these are a lot of guys who I've seen grow up from a young age play, who I've tracked in college, players who I've played with, players who I played against. So it was a very cool draft to watch and, you know, a lot of good things that I saw.
I'm curious, so like, what is that like? Is it a weird experience? Is it like, okay, that's cool for them? Like, what goes through your mind when you're watching Super Draft?
I think it's amazing because they're your peers and it's great, especially when you see a guy you've played against in college, you're like, oh yeah, he was good. Or you're like, oh, that's a little high. Like he didn't do that much against us. Or even a guy who you played against during your academy days. And you're like, wow, this guy's really a first round draft pick. He was like decent back in the day, or he was killing me when we were 15. He's killing it now at 21. So it's definitely a cool experience.
I guess first, can you explain to people who don't know, like what is a Generation Adidas player? Cause I think a lot of people they hear the name and they're like, what is that?
Yeah, so obviously MLS is very different from the other pro drafts in the sense that you can't declare for the draft as an underclassman and just decide as a freshman, sophomore, junior, decide you want to go to the draft. So once your college eligibility is up, you're, you know, eligible, you can try and get your name in the draft. And if you're not immediately a senior who's eligible for the draft, the only way you can get in the draft is by signing a Generation Adidas deal. So this is a program through Adidas where your contract is paid for by the program, which is why you see so many Generation Adidas players get picked high, because their salaries do not count against the contracts that the team has, the salary cap, which is incredible. So that's why you always see the Generation Adidas players getting picked high.
That makes sense. I appreciate you explaining that to me. I'm sure our listeners do as well. But give me your takes. Like, who are some of the guys you were like, man, that guy's really good? I know Philip Miyako. He was supposed to go number one, center midfielder. I watched a little bit of tape on him. He looked like really good, electric player, a little undersized. But, I mean, that was kind of surprising. He went three, right?
Yeah, I think I've watched a lot of Clemson play. They're one of the teams that I love playing, one of the best teams in college soccer. I love a lot of their guys. And Philip Miyako was there this year in the fall. I think he played a little more attacking. I watched him play more fall 2020 than 2019. I think he played a little more attacking in fall 2019, had 2 goals, 8 assists, was a All-American as a freshman, you know, Mac Herman semifinalist. So a lot of pedigree. And this year, the games I watched, he played as a number 6 and he was tidy on the ball. You know, not quite a destroyer. He was good on the ball. He liked to spray the ball around. So I think he's definitely a player who could translate to the MLS level if he just does things simple and keeps it simple. And he was expected to go number one. And Matthew Doyle is like, he's the most surefire number one pick since 2015 with Kyle Aaron. And then he doubled down. He was like, nope, not actually. He's the most surefire number one since Steve Zakuani in 2009. Then 2 minutes later, it's like with the first pick, Austin FC sucks, Daniel Pereira. And I just started laughing.
It was a tough day for Matt Doyle. I don't know if you were watching like the Twitter show, but he was giving his like pick every single time. And I think he just missed every single time. And that's not a bad thing. Like, it's impossible to nail the draft, but I just felt bad for Matt Doyle that night.
Yeah. So he went to number 3. They got him and, you know, he's one of the better prospects in the whole thing.
What were the surprises to you? Who were the guys you're like, that guy's pretty good. I saw him play and I think he might be able to be a contributor in the MLS.
Yeah, I think the big surprise for, I think, a lot of people was Josh Bauer dropping down to the 31st pick. He's a local guy from New Hampshire, played at UNH. So I played against him, I think, 3 times in college because they're close to Boston University. Played them in preseason, played them during the season. We like spring season, played him in all three. So he's a player I've seen a lot, always been a good player. And he was rated as a number three prospect in the entire draft, the number one senior. And I think they had him probably going only as low as number five to Atlanta, if that. But then Atlanta ended up dealing that pick, and he just kept sliding and sliding and sliding. And I remember Newman Revolution had the number 24 pick. I was like, oh, this is perfect. He's going to get to play at home. I'm actually kind of happy for him. Then they picked someone else, and he dropped all the way to 31, where Atlanta had their first pick. So Atlanta got to trade up, get some GAM, and get the guy who they would have probably taken if they had the pick. So I say that's one surprise in that direction who went a little lower. And there are a couple guys who I think in the first round that, you know, maybe not a lot of people knew about that could make impacts. Justin McMaster, he's a good winger from Wake Forest who went to Minnesota United. They're a team that uses their draft picks when you look at Hassani Dotson, Chase Gasper, Dane St. Clair. So if he gets, you know, a little bit of a run out, there's no Kevin Molino, I think he can show out a little bit. I think Rio Hope Gund, another player who I've played against for a long time, you know, from now to all the way back to when we were 13, 14 years old, he's been the same player, just tidy, no nonsense, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He went to Orlando. He can play a number of different positions along the back line. And I think Oscar Perea should have fun with him. Who knows if he'll play a lot, but I think if he does get on the field, he's a solid player. And I also think Iracoze Donaciano from Virginia, he's a player who can play pretty much anywhere on the field. And I think he's going to be a guy who Nashville feels they can plug in many places for them.
Well, that's great, man. I don't know much about college soccer, but I think it's really interesting just to learn about the guys that come in. I think it's really interesting about college soccer in general. Like, do a lot of these guys end up being national team contributors? Obviously, there's a few here and there, but is there any guy or any guys you look at right now that you think could have a future in the national team?
I think it's very hard because you do look at recent guys and you look at Chase Gaspar. He got to his debut right the January after he was drafted. You look at Hassani Dotson in the U23 camp now. You look at Henry Kessler, Daryl DK. So there are players like that. So I think the common theme, if you look at all those players, is they're defensive-minded. Obviously, Hassani Dotson was a defensive midfielder, but he was able to break out playing left back. So if you look at the top American defenders, you have Michael DeShields, who went number five. It'll be a little tough at DC United to play at center back. He was actually signed a deal with Revolution 2, so who knows what's going on there. But obviously, DC United has Brillant and Birnbaum as two starting center backs. They also have Donovan Pines. So if he goes in, he has guys ahead of him, but injuries happen. Who knows? Maybe, you know, something happens and he breaks out. And then I also think you look at left back. Left back's a position where anything can happen. So you have Matt DeRosa, went to Toronto FC. They don't really have a left back on the roster now. So if he somehow ends up starting, maybe he's in the national team picture a year from now. Or Aiden Stanley, a guy who was on youth national teams. He went to Austin FC. There's Ben Sport ahead of him. But once again, who knows? If he gets a starting spot, puts together a season, anything can happen.
Yeah, I feel like if you're a left back and you're half decent and then you end up being more than half decent, we're like, hey, wait, can we call you then, please? So I think that's definitely something that's interesting. I'm curious also, another USMNT related question. So Orlando City last year, they go Daryl DK, right? They have a good run in the playoffs. DK gets a national team look. They have some holes in defense, but they go Derek Dotson, who's a center forward. He can play on the wing a little bit, but does this mean like DK possibly on the way out? Is this more of a Dom Dwyer thing? I think that's just interesting. Like, I'm putting a lot of things together. Is that I'm wasting my time or just like, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Derek Dotson is a great player. I watched him play a lot for Georgetown as they made the run to win the national championship. So he was picked very, very high. I believe he was the eighth pick, I think it was, and they traded up for him. So clearly he's a guy who they see has upside. They wouldn't trade up for him and they didn't see him earning a roster spot. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. And obviously Dotson and DK came up against each other in the College Cup final. Rio Hope Gun, who I mentioned, also went to Orlando. So that's three guys from that final who are now all at Orlando. So clearly Orlando scouted that game. They scouted those players. So I trust them. And after you strike gold with a player like DK, then, you know, they definitely know what they're doing in the draft.
What about Miyaka? Obviously, he goes to the Rapids and their midfield's kind of crowded. They have Kellen Acosta, And then they have, of course, Cole Bassett. Is Miyaka someone that could come in and kind of push either of those two guys, or do you think he's locked in as the six?
I think definitely he's a guy who can play anywhere in the center of midfield. So I think he's a guy who's going to go in number three pick, and he's an international player. He's from Kenya. He has a chip on his shoulder. He wants to be the best person he can be. I believe he said coming out of high school that he was going to play in college for 2 years. So this is a guy who's had this vision for a long time. He's a driven player. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets minutes around there. But obviously, it's a tough midfield. But when you have the number three pick and you have a player like that on the board, you have to take him.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Well, I think that's most of the Super Draft talk. Is there any homegrown guys you're looking at and say, man, that was a good pickup? Maybe keep an eye on him if there was an Olympics, U20s, anything like that?
I want to give out an award, and I want to call this the Hassani Dawson Award. Hassani Dawson 2019 draft was the number 31 pick out of Oregon State. Wasn't really thought about. You know, picks in the second round usually don't even make the roster, but he makes the roster. He plays a bunch of crucial minutes at different positions, rookie of the year candidate, been at multiple U23, now at a full national team U23 camp. So it can happen. You can have a guy late like that where they absolutely just blossom out of nowhere. So if I had to take a guess, my Hassani Dawson this year would be Logan Pancho, who went number 32 to DC United. He's a guy who was on the U17 team with Weston McKennie, with Christian Pulisic. He's actually still very good friends with Christian Pulisic to this day. And actually, like Weston McKennie, he didn't make the final roster for the World Cup, even though he was at residency. Now he went to Stanford, has been a captain for them, starter since day one, now a captain since sophomore year. So he's a guy who has a national team experience, who has a leadership experience. And like Hassani Dawson, he's normally a center midfielder, but has played a lot of right back as well at Stanford. So I think just that maturity aspect, that experience aspect, the versatility. He went to DC United. He's almost similar to like a Russell Knauss, who played right back and played center mid. So I think he's a guy who can be plugged in a number of places, and who knows what happens. But I'd say keep an eye on him if we're talking about second round late guys who maybe, who knows.
And you can call it that. But I think we need to address the elephant in the room. Christian Pulisic, pronounced it right, I think, I hope. GQ shoot. Can we just talk about it quickly? It's good. It's if you haven't seen it, GQ, Christian Pulisic, go look at those photos. I don't know. I don't really have a take. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like that's our best player.
Yeah, to describe how I felt, I actually have to go back to last week, and when I'm back at home, not in school, I don't always wake up the earliest. I'm the first to admit that, and so I woke up last week to a text from Matt that said hobby. And so I'm like, oh, he probably scored. I look at my phone. He scored a hat trick. I was like, what is going on? That is crazy. This kid who was on our podcast, like, he scored a hat trick. That's amazing. That's not what I was expecting to wake up to. So then fast forward now to this week. I open my phone. I go on Twitter like I do in the morning. And I see Christian Pulisic like laying down on a couch looking like a model. And I was just like, what's going on? I rubbed my eyes a little bit. I sent it to Matt. I really couldn't believe my eyes, but it's like, hey, Christian, do you, because at the end of the day, is that the personality I think he has? He's a little bit on the shyer side, but that means Christian Pulisic, he's at least trying his best to embrace his stardom, embrace the fact that he is our guy. He is our quote unquote GOAT. He is our number 10. He is the US mega superstar. Because if you look at the top guys from all the sports, they've all done stuff like that. Look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's did stuff like that back when he was in his heyday in the early 2000s. If he wants to be our Tom Brady of soccer, he has to do that. And so I appreciate him because that's outside his comfort zone. I know that for a fact. I don't know him personally, but I know if you ask Christian Pulisic when he first went to Dortmund to pose for GQ like that, he's not doing it.
No, that's true. That's a good point. But it's
I like it because he's trying to embrace his stardom. He's trying to be like, I'm going to be mainstream, not just U.S. soccer player, but U.S. athlete.
No, that's true. That's true. It kind of reminds me of that 03 photo shoot with, you know, DeMarcus Beasley and that whole team. So hopefully it does age a little bit better than that. But I guess we're going to have to buy tank tops, start recording our podcast in tank tops for the people. If people want that, I guess we'll do it, but I don't know.
Hey, GQ, if you want me to do a photo shoot, I'll do one.
I mean, I'm game. You know, I've been working out a little bit over the quarantine. Yeah, so, you know,
it was good.
Yeah, man. We could look, there's U.S. soccer stars, and then there's U.S. soccer podcast stars. And I think, you know, look, if Pulisic is the first one to do it, that means we're probably next, right?
Yeah, I mean, hey, my birthday's December 22nd. I would love to be Mr. December. You know,
all right, perfect. You could be Mr. December, I could be Mr. August. We can both be the Mr. Podcasters. Like, I think it's there. I mean, I know GQ is probably listening, so come on, just give us a call. You know how to find us, hello@wungle.us, and we'll get working on this. But any other thoughts, or could we wrap here?
I mean, we should probably, I mentioned it, but just Matthew Hoppe, he's on a tier right now. I think that's just it's incredible. And Schalke's still not getting the wins they need, but 5 goals in 3 games. He is the top goal scorer in all of Europe's top 5 leagues in 2021, tied with Robert Lewandowski. Matthew Hoppe, Arizona, Barcelona Academy. It's incredible. And I think one thing I will say is I said the same thing every time I watched Sebastian Soto play for the youth national teams, for the full national team, for the goal I've seen him score for Telstar. Him and Matthew Hoppe, it makes so much sense why these guys literally score goals for fun in academy. Because the goals he's scoring aren't as easy as they look. Even the one this past week, he still had to get the ball and he still had to read the play. So if he's doing that against Bundesliga players, against players who have been in the goalies who've been in the league for years on years, imagine what he's doing to a 15-year-old kid who has to do his pre-calculus homework before the game.
That's a good, really good point. I think I'm very happy for Matthew. I think, you know, next week we should do something where we kind of break down the striker position as a whole. Obviously, we're running out of time now, but I think definitely shout out Matthew Hoppe. Also, shout out Sebastian Soto. He's going back to Norwich City, so we'll see. He'll probably start with the U23s and work his way up to the team, hopefully. Another guy in the championship, hopefully making his way to the Premier League. Americans are everywhere. American soccer is always on the way up, and we're here happy to talk about it with you guys. So I think we'll wrap it up there and say thanks, everyone, for listening to the One Goal US Soccer podcast. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, check out our past comical interview. We got more on the way, so keep posted, and thanks, everyone, for listening.